following is a Super Network production with Super Marcy.
Look, as much as I love that we don't really see images of that film, I just want to see that film.
The terrible Australian Bea Jermaine.
If they made a romantic comedy out of The Fly, this would probably be it.
It contains coarse language.
After it was over and the credits were done, my friend just looked at me and he just said, "Dude, that was
mature themes."
Her husband wants her need satisfied and she had a zombie baby with him.
Potential spoilers.
Spoiler alert.
Listener discretion is advised. Please find us at supermarcy.com and subscribe to us via Patreon at patreon.com/thesupernetwork. Enjoy.
G'day everyone, this is Bea Jermaine, aka The Terrible Aussie, and welcome back to episode 15 of Podcast of Horror, the podcast where we dive into a retrospective look at the short-lived one-season Nick Garris-created anthology horror show, Fear Itself, and as well as other anthology films and TV shows as well. And with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, the one, the only, Super Marcy. Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well, thank you. And I guess we should clarify, Podcasters of Horror is a podcast where we look at horror anthologies, but currently we're on Fear Itself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I had to sort of clarify that just a little bit in the intro because, again, for the next couple of episodes, we are diving into Fear Itself.
Yes.
And like we did with the first two seasons of Masters of Horror, we're doing two episodes from the show each episode of our podcast. At the moment, we are currently just only one episode into Fear Itself. So we've already covered two episodes from the show. And then for this one, we're going to be covering episodes 3 and 4, which of course will be Ronnie Yu's Family Man and John Landis's In Sickness and In Health. So we have two pretty interesting episodes to talk about, to say the least. But before we do, Marcy, what have you been up to since we last recorded a show? Because I forgot to ask you about that before.
Yeah, I guess just been busy with the side and our podcasts and all of that, as we are currently in lockdown in Melbourne, Victoria. And we were saying the same thing a year ago, but we're in lockdown again, over 200 days, all up in lockdown. La, 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 la. Just trying to keep busy at home and not go crazy. How about you? How are you doing?
Pretty much the exact same. It's just so weird and kind of surreal that we're literally back to the same spot where we were compared to last year in terms of being in lockdown. Because I know around this time last year, because, yeah, we were in lockdown and we were in that way for at least until the end of October, from what I remember, or maybe early November. So hopefully this one won't be as long. But to be fair, our sort of daily case rate is a lot smaller compared to last year's, which was like in the triple digits. And we're only just in the double digits at the moment. So hopefully over the next month or so, within the next month, fingers crossed and knock on wood, that the numbers will go down and restrictions will ease and we could actually finally see each other again in person again.
Yes. Well, hopefully that'll happen someday, but, you know.
Indeed.
It is what it is. And since real life is a horror show, let's just talk about fictional horror shows, which are probably less intense than real life.
Definitely. It's our gateway away from the horrors of the real world by experiencing other horrors in the world of television. Hence why we are discussing the series Fear Itself, which, of course, for those out there who don't remember, was a one-season anthology show created by Mick Garris that, even though it was a standalone show, it kind of, in certain ways, acts as kind of the unofficial third season of Masters of Horror. And again, we're about two episodes in, so we'll get right to talking about our next two episodes from the show.
Yes.
And first up, of course, is the episode Family Man.
What the hell? Who are you?
You know who I am, Dennis. We met in the emergency room. Remember? Amico?
Veronica.
I want to be able to tell you that I'm sorry for the way that things turned out for you, but It's God's will. You gotta accept that.
You're wearing my suit?
Yeah. Didn't think you'd mind under the circumstances. You got some nice stuff in your closet. Not my style, but I'll get used to it.
You were in my house? My family? But what have you done?
Easy, Dennis.
I swear to God, if you touch my family, I'm gonna...
I'm not gonna hurt them. I would never hurt them. They're a beautiful family.
Which, of course, was directed by Ronnie Yu, for best known as the director of films such as Freddy vs. Jason, Bride of Chucky, and The Bride with White Hair. And the episode was written by Daniel Knuff. Knuff? I probably butchered his last name. Yeah, so please forgive me. I probably butchered his last name, so please forgive me. But for those out there who don't know who he was the creator of the short-lived TV series Carnivale. So that's probably the work he's probably best known for.
Mm.
And this episode stars Clifton Collins Jr., Colin Ferguson, Josie Davis, Brent Strait, and Stephen Lobo. And the plot summary, which I am reading off the episode's IMDb page, is: a prisoner must protect his family when he inadvertently switches bodies with a serial killer after a near-death experience. Hmm. Now, I guess I'll go first. Now, when I watched Fear Itself the first time many, many years ago when it first came out, two episodes in, I thought, the episodes are kind of a bit of a mixed bag at the moment. The first episode, not so good, and the second episode was pretty decent. But I will say this, though. I had a lot of expectations with Family Man, mainly because Ronnie Yu was directing this episode. And, of course, you know, like I said, he directed Freddy vs. Jason and Bride of Chucky. And also, he's a director who's made so many different varieties of films. And he's also a very unique and stylistic director as well.
Yeah.
And I thought that the concept of having sort of a body, using the kind of the body swap formula, but applying it to a situation where our main character switches bodies with a serial killer. And mind you, this is about at least 12 years before the horror comedy Freaky came out. So this movie kind of was a precursor to that. Although that's kind of more slasher and this is more kind of serial killer in terms of its story.
Yeah.
So I
different. Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. So I definitely had was very much looking forward to seeing this episode. And at the time, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really well-done episode. And at that point, it was probably my favorite episode of the series at that point. And now, rewatching it again for this podcast, I have to say I still feel exactly the same way. I think it's a really solid episode. It's got some pretty strong performances. And also, it's really well directed by Ronnie Yu, who does bring a lot of style to the episode, even though it's, you know, as prevalent as it's been so far into the series, like these episodes kind of feel a bit more TV show-esque than compared to Masters of Horror. But he does still bring enough interesting stylistic choices to it that definitely make it feel unique and interesting. And also on a script writing level, Daniel Knuff, I'm going to go with that pronunciation of his last name, but if I have got it wrong, please forgive me. He did a really good job with the writing of this episode. And also, it's just a really solid and compelling episode where you, from beginning to end, you're just really hooked. And you're just not exactly sure what's going to happen, being that our main character is now in the body of a serial killer, but the serial killer has taken over his body and is now pretty much taken upon himself to be a part of that man's family. So you don't know exactly how things are going to go down. But the way it sort of handles the story was really well done. So, but Marcy, I know this was your first time watching the episode. Well, technically, all the episodes from Fear Itself are your first time.
Yes.
All of them will be your first watches. But what did you think of the episode Family Man?
Yeah, so, yeah, the difference, I guess, between you and I is you've seen all these episodes, like, at least around the time that they came out, and whereas I never really bothered with this series. I don't know why, I just didn't get there, and this is my first time watching it. And yeah, after I guess episode one and two, where episode one was very lackluster, at least episode two kind of picked up a bit more. So I wasn't really sure, like, what to expect coming into another two episodes. And I was quite excited that we had one that was directed by Ronnie Yu. Like yourself, I think he's a really interesting director, and I like the kind of styles that you know, he goes with his films. And doing something with a body swap, you know, it's an intriguing idea. And I guess these two episodes are kind of like the two kind of back-to-back serial killer type episodes.
Made two main characters. So.
Yeah. So, you know, they're very interesting ones to actually watch back-to-back. But whereas this one, you know, it's got that body swap element. So it adds a whole different layer and this kind of psychological horror. And, you know, the horror is that, specifically, I guess, the Colin Ferguson character, when he's body swapped into the serial killer, like, he's in this situation where he's in prison, no one's going to believe him, he doesn't really know, like, what this killer's done, it's not like he can provide evidence or anything like that, and then he has the fear of, like, this serial killer is in his body, and who knows what he may do to his wife and kids, so... Excuse me. Yeah, definitely adds this very psychological horror element to it, which I think worked really well. And some of the visual styles, I felt like the prison scenes had this more of a dreamlike quality compared to the other scenes, which I found really interesting. And I think out of at least the four episodes I've seen of Fear Itself now, I feel like Family Man would have been more right at home if it was a Masters of Horror, like, even with a bit more of a budget, like, this could have been, like, I'm not saying it's not good, like, it's a great entry. Maybe with more of a budget, they could have done a little bit more, which would have just made it, like, one of the top episodes even for that series. But it's the only one of those four so far that feels like it's more at home with that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Kind of thing. So, yeah, that was kind of, like, my overall thoughts. Like, I thought it was really good. It was really engaging. The performances were generally mostly quite good. I think a little bit of it falters for me just slightly, and this is just more, I think, nitpicking, is the wife just doesn't, like, contact anyone about her husband's sudden weird behavior.
Definitely. Yeah. And also for the fact, like, the episode kind of, when it starts out, you're going to introduce to Colin Ferguson's character, who the character's name is Dennis. Basically, the episode kind of shows, like, how perfect his life is. He has a really happy family. His wife is gorgeous. His kids are good. You know, they go to church and he does a lot for the community. Mm. So the episode goes out of its way to kind of really paint the character of Dennis as being such a nice guy, to the point where it almost becomes a little too cartoonish. But then, of course, once he gets in that car accident and his body is swapped with the character of Brodigan, Bordigan, I probably butchered that character's last name, but the serial killer played by Clifton Collins Jr. Pretty much that's where his whole world turns around. And then, of course, Brodigan pretty much decides, you know, because he is a serial killer who's murdered tons of people, including families. And he thinks to himself, you know what, I want to see what this actual, what it's like to be a family man. And, you know, you see he's trying his best to kind of fit in, but it's very obvious, like, he isn't. And at the same time, though, I can definitely see what you mean about the wife. It's like, how can you not notice that your husband has had such a shift in personality? I can get, like, because he's been in an accident and it was probably a traumatic experience in that for him. But I think the way he acts, though, it's like, it's very much out of character what we saw in the first few minutes of him in the at the start of the episode.
You would have thought, like, that maybe she would have rang a doctor or something. And I get we only have so much time to work with, but I feel like that's a bit of an obvious thing that kind of just takes you out of it a little bit. So that was just kind of one little nitpicky thing that kind of was just like, oh, really? Okay. That did that. But, like, when kind of the performances and stuff are, like, that good, it doesn't affect it that much, because I think both Colin Ferguson and Clifton Collins Jr. are both, like, really, really good. And they're both believable in both the roles. I mean, we don't see Clifton Collins really much as the serial killer.
Yeah.
But we kind of get the idea, and I think, plus we've already seen, like, what the character of Dennis is like, that when it's Clifton Collins playing him, it's believable that you think, like, yeah, that's that guy. So I think on those levels, like, it worked really, really well. and it's definitely an intriguing episode, and so far I think it's the best one I've seen with this series. We'll see if anything else outdoes it in terms of, at least for me. But as it stands, I think it's the best one so far, and it'll definitely be hard to top, because I just think it, for the most part, it was done really, really well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I think another thing, I guess in terms of, you know, my nitpicks with this episode, I guess it are the guards who are guarding Clifton Collins Jr. Like, I don't know how kind of, like... you know, this kind of works with security. But my main problem with this is because it kind of establishes that Clifton Collins Jr.'s character is very much well known in the community, has killed, like I said, so many people that ever. And of course, his guard that's there to kind of watch over him is related to one of the people who got murdered. And I can't help but feel like that couldn't happen in real life because there's a conflict of interests or something like that.
It kind of suspends disbelief a little bit that, you know, that kind of thing would be allowed, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a bit like, it's a bit too typical kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess in the only way I can sort of justify that sort of, that part of the story is because, you know, all these characters, all the police and everything hate this man so much for what he has done and all the murders he's committed, that, you know, they want to make his life a living hell. So basically, if it means having one of the guards who's related to one of the victims be one to watch over him, then that's them, like, you know, basically sort of messing him up psychologically and physically as well. So I guess I can definitely see that, especially because when you see the other cop characters and the police chief and that, they really have, and justifiably so, very hostile towards Brodigan as a character. So, and so you can get where they're coming from. However, though, what I think makes this episode really interesting is its ending. And it's a very bleak ending because Clifton Collins Jr. as Dennis, he escapes the police, goes to his house, finds Brodigan, like, washing the dishes and all that. And they get into a massive fight, which almost at times feels almost Freddy versus Jason-esque in terms of how it's choreographed.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Brodigan stabs him, but then Dennis gets the upper hand and he kills him. And then when he wakes up, he's back in his own body. But then and the police are there, and he realizes that he was too late to get home and his wife and son were murdered. But the daughter was still alive, and when when the police ask him, like, who did it, it ends with her pointing at her dad. So basically, the episode, it's like now he's back to where he was, and everyone thinks that he killed his family.
So regardless, he's fucked either way, basically, because Brodigan killed the the wife and son in the Dennis body. So then Dennis himself is back in his body, but he can't say, hey, I had a body swap with a serial killer, because that sounds ridiculous. But it is a really good sort of hard-hitting, bleak ending, which is, I guess, what was it more very interesting about, like, Masters of Horror and, I guess, the continuation into this is these kind of twist, bleakish endings, because these don't tend to leave you off on a very happy note, which kind of almost defies convention in a way.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's one that actually it's a bleak ending that makes sense for the story. It's not the kind of like, that's the thing, I'm usually half and half when it comes to bleak endings. Like, sometimes, like, I think, oh yeah, that makes sense, and it's the only logical explanation where, the only logical place where the story can go. But other times a film can just go for a bleak ending for the sake of being bleak, and it just annoys the shit out of me.
Mm.
Like, it's just, especially when you have so much horrible stuff that happens beforehand and to end it just on an equally bleak note, it's like, really, you're just basically punishing us at this point.
Yeah, but, pretty much.
But I think this one, though, it actually makes sense within the story. And again, it sort of leaves a great moment for the episode to end on.
Mm, definitely, definitely. I agree. It's a very impactful ending. And I think this is definitely one of the ones that we'd probably remember a lot more than other episodes as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it also feels like, you know, comparing sort of like, you know, Ronnie Yu's more English language work like Freddy versus Jason or Bride of Chucky, this is definitely much more serious. And it's kind of interesting kind of seeing him tackling something that is that this grounded as a story, even though it has a fantastical element at the center
of it. Yeah, and there is some sort of a little bit of dark humor in there, but it's not like it dominates it or anything. I feel like it's more there to just kind of ease a little bit of that very uneasy tension.
Indeed, indeed. But overall, I think Family Man is a really good episode. Definitely for me, in hindsight, for the show when I first watched it, and now it's definitely one of the best episodes of the series. And I definitely look forward to sort of, you know, going through the series again and finding out if there's any episodes that will top this one. But at the moment, this is definitely, I think, the best episode of the show so far.
Mm.
But so overall, I think it's really well made. It's well acted. It's intense. And it's quite an impactful little episode. So if I had to give this episode a rating, I'd give it a solid 4 out of 5. What about yourself, Marcy?
Yeah, same score, 4 out of 5 from me as well. And I do think that this is one that could actually work as a feature. And it is different to something like Freaky because these are two, like, grown adult men, whereas that is a serial killer that switches bodies with, like, a teenage girl. And this one's a bit more serious, where that one's more like a comedic film.
Exactly.
You know, tend to talk about, like, yeah, something like this definitely could be a feature-length film. You could even use the same actors because I think they're pretty good in those roles. So,
exactly.
Yeah. So far, yeah, as it stands, I think it's the best episode of Fear Itself so far.
Definitely. We'll move right along to episode 4, which we'll definitely have a lot to discuss because I think it's very fair to say this will be, out of all the episodes that was made for this series, this is definitely the most controversial episode, not because of the story itself, which, when you think about it, is probably the least controversial out of any of the episodes. It's more about who made this episode that's definitely going to have people talking.
Yeah.
And that episode, of course, is In Sickness and in Health.
What did she say to you?
Whatever it is, Sam, don't believe it. You have to understand that there are people
that would say just about anything to keep us apart. You can't just believe everything that you hear.
What? What could they say? Look me in the eye and tell me what could be so horrible. Carlos, you're scaring me.
Am I?
Now, I'm going to do something slightly different. I'm going to say the plot summary for this first and then say who made this episode for this one, because I think that's important to do so. This episode, In Sickness and in Health, the plot summary for it, which again I'm reading off IMDb, is a bride receives a mysterious note on her wedding day, warning her that she is about to wed a serial killer. Now, this episode was directed by John Landis, who, of course, is the director of many horror and comedy films, such as American Werewolf in London, Michael Jackson's Thriller music video, Innocent Blood, and, of course, has directed the Masters of Horror episodes, Dear Woman and Family. However, though, the controversial element of this episode, of course, is who wrote this episode. The episode was written by Victor Salva. For those out there who don't know who Victor Salva is, He's probably best known as the writer director of the Jeepers Creepers trilogy and as well as the film Powder. But the reason why he's such a controversial figure in the filmmaking world is that back in 1988, on the set of his debut film, Clown House, he was convicted of sexual misconduct with one of the underage stars of the film and videotaping the encounter. And he was arrested and tried and sent to jail for 3 years, but he only served 15 months. And then since then, he kind of was out of the filmmaking world for a number of years. And then, of course, he sort of came back with a film called Nature of the Beast. And then, of course, made the film Powder. And then another film. And then, of course, made the Jeepers Creepers trilogy. Now, before we get into this episode, now, I think you and I have very strong feelings on Victor Salva as a person, to say the least. And I know a lot of people out there who do, and people will probably wonder why are we talking about an episode of a TV show that he was involved in. I guess for me personally, I've always been a person who can easily sort of separate the art from the artist. Like, I've seen a lot of films in my time that were either starring or directed by very controversial figures, and like throughout my whole life, and I still do to this day. So I'm able to kind of judge a filmmaker's work for their work rather than them as a person. That doesn't mean I do not condone any of their actions whatsoever. In fact, I do condemn them. But I think for me as a person and as a film critic, if I'm judging their work, I think it's only fair that I judge their work fairly for what it is, regardless of my personal feelings on that person as for the sort of the things they have done in their life. And also, that being said, this episode of the show, like, has more than one person behind it. You know, there's also the actors, the crew, and yes, even John Landis himself. Like, you know, some of these like works that they're involved with are sometimes bigger than the person themselves. And, you know, a lot of other people have worked on this episode. So if I do give any credit to this episode, it is, of course, the hard work of, you know, the cast and the crew behind this episode. Like I said, I don't condone any of Victor Salva's actions. I think what he done was very much despicable. Having seen quite a number of his work over the years, even like when I first heard about these terrible things, like, I still judge his work fairly. Like, if I think it's good, I'll say so. If it's bad, I'll say so as well. So I don't want people to think that I'm in any support of him as a filmmaker, as a person. I'm only just judging the art for what it is as the art. So I think that's my kind of point of view of it. What do you think, Marcy, in terms of this controversial element?
Look, for the sake of our podcast, I watched this episode, but for me, Victor Salva is not someone I can really separate the art from the artist, and that's just how I viewed his work even before I knew about what happened, and I just find it very just it doesn't sit well with me. Obviously never supported him. I've always been very outspoken that if he's rehabilitated, whatever, but why is he still in this kind of industry? And that's, you know, a bit of a line to be drawn, but that's kind of just, you know, how I feel personally. People will see it very differently, but that's just my stance on it personally.
Yeah, exactly. I should say it as well, I do not begrudge or blame anyone who doesn't want to review or even discuss any of his work as a filmmaker. I can totally not begrudge anyone for doing that, because nobody should have to, especially for the stuff he has done in his life as a person. So I do not begrudge anyone to do that. And if you do not, and you know, you shouldn't have to force to review something if you do not like the person. And I definitely 100% agree with that notion. But again, like, for the sake of this show, we will review the work. So with that out of the way and our feelings on Victor Salvat known, we'll get right to the episode.
I mean, our feelings on John Landis, I think you can go back to one of the ones we did for Masters of Horror. Probably Dear Woman, which I think sums up a lot of things. But yeah, just these days I just feel very very weirdly with John Landis. But again, in his case, I can kind of a bit more separate things.
Exactly.
So anyway, let's get to this episode because we've already made this massively awkward.
Yeah, exactly. But it had to be said because it would be even more awkward if we didn't say anything about it. So we'll get right to it. And with all that out of the way, we'll get to the episode of In Sickness and Health. Now, again, with all the stuff, all these two controversial figures behind this episode, I was definitely curious to see how this episode would turn out, especially when this episode was just before it aired, I read the synopsis and thought, okay, that's a pretty interesting idea for an episode. Like, you could definitely do a lot with it. Like, and I was kind of curious to see how they would approach this material. For the first half of it, and even though I have seen this episode before, like then, well, I guess what I thought of it back a couple years ago, when I first saw it, I always found this episode to be one of my least favorites overall as an episode. And rewatching this episode again, I pretty much do feel the same way. I feel like the episode never really 100% fully capitalizes on its unique premise. It starts off well enough because for the first half, John Landis and how he approaches the story, especially the first half, it always feels like a Hallmark TV movie in terms, especially like a wedding kind of film. And then once it sort of goes along and then, of course, the note is revealed, which basically says you are about to marry a serial killer. Then it kind of takes a turn because you follow the character of Samantha, played by Maggie Lawson, as she's sort of like in her trying to find out what is going on. Like, is this note for real? Is this like a joke? And then, of course, like, she talks to her friends, one of them being Sonia Bennett, who was actually in the episode Dear Woman as well. So talking to her friends and also trying to sort of coax things out of her potential husband, Carlos, played by James Roday. And also just trying to find out, like, what is going on and the mystery behind this note. And as the episode goes along, it does start to get a giallo kind of vibe, the way how it's shot and also the tone. However, though, once it gets to the final 10 minutes of the episode, that's when it starts to unravel and fall apart due to a plot twist that, which I could definitely see working, but the way how it's handled in this episode, it really doesn't make sense when you kind of look back on it.
There's clues because I guess half of the twist.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely clues, but then when you think about it, it makes no freaking sense whatsoever. And I wasn't minding the episode. Like, I thought, okay, it's an interesting premise. The way it was kind of sort of had this isolating feel to it, I thought was interesting with this very weird kind of religious.
Yeah, there's a lot of religious imagery.
Yeah, I mean there is a church, obviously. But, you know, I'm like, okay, this is not too bad. There's a bit of this kind of lighter kind of humor sprinkled in it, but it really just, the whole thing feels so ruined by the really stupid ending that doesn't make any sense. And look, overall, I guess the performances as well kind of weren't the best. And I think it was more so from the side characters rather than anyone else. Like, Maggie Lawson was mostly okay. James Roday was a little bit over the top, but he was still kind of okay. You could go along with that. I think it was more like the bridesmaids and stuff were just not the best. And Marshall Bell's in this twice for some reason.
But yeah, he has a dual role as the twin uncles of Carlos. And it's never really kind of, not to say, there's really kind of no point to it. I mean, there's one uncle in particular who's kind of the black sheep of the family we get to know a little bit. And he kind of, divulges to Samantha, like, you know, Carlos had a bit of a dark past. But him as the other uncle, we never really sort of get to spend any time with him. And you could have easily got any other actor into that role. It just didn't really make sense to have him play two characters.
It was just a very weird thing in there. But yeah, so as the bride gets this note that she's about to, it just says, you are about to marry a serial killer. Clue number one, it's not specific. It doesn't say her name. It doesn't say she, him, you know, those clues there. It just says you are about to marry a serial killer. And number one on your clue thing is like, it's not specific. So that could have just as easily have been meant for the husband or the groom, especially when you kind of see the hint that the priest who was given this to give to, well, he thought was the bride, doesn't hear very well. So he obviously heard the wrong thing.
Yeah.
So it's there, right? That, okay, she's meant to be the serial killer. If she's meant to be the serial killer, why is she so scared of her husband if she's a killer and she could probably just kill him? Like, it takes you out of it. And the fact that you hear that she has this brother and then somehow the brother gave the husband the note for some reason, dressed in drag, and they're both the killers. What sense did any of this make? It was a twist for the sake of having a twist, and it was crap.
Indeed. And I think, like, there's definitely potential there because...
Yeah,
it's an
interesting, I guess, central idea. And the way, you know, that isolating feel as you're dealing with something mysterious, like, that kind of works. But then it's where it's going is where it messes up. And I'm sorry I interrupted you, but please go forth.
I was going to say, like, I guess this episode was meant to be kind of like, you know, like how when, you know, it's your wedding day and everyone always has cold feet and they're sort of questioning, like, oh, should I marry this person and stuff like that. This is kind of more the extreme version of that kind of scenario. Like, should I marry a serial killer or not? And the thing is, like, you find out, because it is established that Samantha does have a brother, like, early in the episode, but he did not want to come because he didn't support the marriage. And I guess, like, the reason he sent the letter was as an act of jealousy that he's not murdering with his sister anymore. And also, but it makes you wonder as well, because I'm not sure if it was Samantha who said this herself or one of her friends, that it's like, oh, it seems like every time you're in a relationship, the guy just gets up and leaves and disappears.
Yeah,
so that makes you question. So it makes you question, like, did she murder all her previous, like, boyfriends in the lead up to this wedding?
I mean, I guess surely her acting this way is because she knew that this note was going to happen, but it was meant to be given to him. Potentially, I don't know, or maybe not, and it was meant for her, and she's meant to make out like he's the killer, that way if she kills him, they would think like it was in self-defense. I don't know. See, I'm overreaching now, and I shouldn't be, because even that doesn't make any sense. Did he send this note out of jealousy, and then what did he think was gonna happen? Like, I don't know.
The way, once you sort of find, once Carlos sort of discovers that, you know, there's something going on with Samantha and her friends, and like that, and her friends keep going up to him asking about certain things and all that, he's unsure what's going on, and he starts to get sort of very agitated about it, to the point where you would think, like, this dude's a full-on psycho.
Yeah,
especially in the last half where he, like, legit stalks her in the church and corners her in a confessional booth.
Yeah,
and you're thinking, like, and all he did was basically, the thing is, like, he's like, it's like, I guess in a way he's being cornered as well. And then once he confesses what he thinks the note was about, is that he, like, prior to, you know, when they were in a relationship and she was away, he hooked up with a woman. But I believe it was only just having dinner with a woman. It wasn't sex or anything like that. But the woman herself became a bit stalkerish towards him.
Yeah, so then you start thinking, oh, so it was this chick, maybe. But it leads to you going, then why is she there so terrified of him if she's the killer? Her own actions don't make any sense, because she's fooling the audience, which takes you out of it completely, because you cannot be fooling the audience. You need to be fooling those around you, and there was no one around you to fool when she was acting like that. So, no, it does not fucking work.
Yeah,
I mean, the way they've done it.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the other way it would have worked is, like, she gets the note, and if they sort of did it in a way, it's like she thinks, like, someone knows I'm a serial killer. Mm. This note wasn't for me. This was for my husband, but it was indirectly sent to me. Mm. I got to find out who this person is and kill them. See, that would be how I would personally approach a story like this. Yeah,
but it never comes across that that's why she's doing it either.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's almost like she's frightened and confused, and if she's a serial killer, why is she behaving this way? As if she thinks her husband, a potential husband, could be a serial killer. So it's one of those things, like the twist ending could work, but the lead up to it and the build up just doesn't make any sense when you think back on everything that you saw prior.
Yeah, it really doesn't. It feels like it's just there for the sake of being there, or they just didn't know how they wanted to go about it. But yeah, no, it just doesn't, it doesn't work. Like, I was on board with, like, oh yes, this is a fairly decent episode for, you know, over halfway, and then it just, it lost me completely. So I'm like, yeah, it's definitely one of the weaker episodes.
Yeah, sure. And also, even at the time when I saw this episode and what I still do now, this is the kind of premise that could work if it was like a 10, 15 minute short, or even a 20 minute film, not a 40 minute one, because it does feel like it's trying to stretch out its plot to make sense. I mean, it probably could if you take some interesting, like an interesting approach to the story to kind of expand it. But the way they sort of do it in here, it feels way longer than it needed to be, especially for a solid if thin premise like this one.
And it just makes me wonder a little bit, when you look at Dear Woman, and it's kind of hatred with women, this one kind of hates women too, because it's the woman who's the crazy killer, apparently.
True, but also it just hates siblings, because her brother's also a serial killer too.
The brother
is jealous that some other dude is... wants his sister, is going to marry his sister, and he can't. And that makes me think, like, there's some kind of weird kind of thing going on there, and I don't want to really think about. But
it really doesn't work for me whatsoever. So
yeah,
this is honestly even like I've looked at this without thinking about who directed it, who wrote it, in terms of how I look at it, just as a whole. No, it doesn't work for me. It really falls apart. So, I don't have too much more to say on it, because I just didn't think it was very good in the end. Its ending kind of ruined something that was, you know, not too bad.
I think, like I said, the potential is there, but it just seemed like, even from a directing and writing standpoint, it just felt very autopilot, you would say. And it just seemed like nobody's giving their best effort to kind of make this an interesting story, or make it have some kind of sense to it as well. So, but this is definitely one of the weaker episodes of this rewatch for me so far. But I mean, it has its positives. Like I said, I do like the tone of it. Like I said, it has that hallmark feel in the first half, and then it kind of switches to a giallo. It's almost like if you imagine, like, if Dario Argento ever directed a hallmark movie, this would probably be it.
kind of thing. Yeah, maybe without a stupid ending, but yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm. And the cast do what they can, but you know, there's only so much they can do. Mm. But outside of that, though, if I had to give this episode a rating, I'd probably say it's about at least a 2 out of 5. I know you definitely disliked Dear Woman, but I think for me, between the two episodes,
it's slightly better than that.
I would say this is of John Lance's work between this show and Masters. This is my least favorite of the three.
I think it's slightly better. You know how much I did not like Dear Woman, so
that is true. That is true. Yeah. That is true. But your final thoughts on this episode, Marcy?
Yeah, look, at least halfway through it was a 3 out of 5 little short. And by the end, it was a 2 out of 5 short. But no, I think, I ranked all the episodes of Masters of Horror, and my least favorite, or the one I thought was crap the most, was Dear Woman. So I think this one is slightly better than that. But yeah, so far the weakest, I think, at least for me personally, with Fear Itself. The ending ruined a decent episode for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. But, well, yeah, that is a
same
a
ratings on both films.
I know, it's weird.
Yeah.
I know. I'm not liking the fact that we're having the same ratings for a lot of episodes. I think even like on the last episode of podcasts where we talked about The Sacrifice and Spooked, I think we roughly had the same ratings for those episodes.
Yeah,
as well,
and I think for the last two of Masters of Horror, ours were almost the same as well.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
But, well, we'll see how the next episode goes, because even though this is a wrap on this episode, for the next episode of Podcasters of Horror, which we'll be doing in October, so it'll be Horror Month, we'll be talking about the episodes 5 and 6, which are Stuart Gordon's Eater and Darren Lynn Bousman's New Year's Day. So I look forward to revisiting those ones.
Two awesome, groovy directors.
Indeed.
Some more Stuart Gordon, which is always great because you know how much I've loved Stuart Gordon, and I've always been a fan of Darren Lynn Bousman, so definitely stoked to see what he kind of brought to the table as well. So
be
interesting for next month's Podcast of Horror to watch those ones, and will we have a guest? I don't know, we'll find out then.
Exactly. You'll have to stay tuned to find out, folks. But in the meantime, though, that can be a wrap on this episode of the show.
Yes.
And, Marcy, where can people find you on the internet this week?
If people want to find me, I'm usually on my Twitter account at twitter.com/supermarcy. Of course, you can find the Super Network, which is what it's our base of operations for all our podcasts, including Podcasters of Horror, which you can find at supermarcy.com. And you can always keep up to date with everything we're doing on one of our socials. We have many, but if you look up the Super Network, you'll find a Facebook page and a group there. So you can go to facebook.com/supernetwork or, you know, find the group there as well. We're on Twitter, I think it's SM_supernetwork for Twitter, and the.super.network on Instagram, and the Super Network on TikTok. We aim to keep these things up to date, but there are only so many hours in the day. And of course, you can check out our YouTube. The aim is to have full episodes of this on our YouTube channel, and I will update that by the time this comes out, hopefully.
Exactly.
So if you're listening to us on YouTube, awesome. And of course, you can find the podcast at all the major podcast streaming platforms. Spotify's, your Google Podcasts. If you check us out on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating. Or if you find us on Podchaser or Good Pods, definitely leave some ratings or a review, and we'll read any reviews we get out on the show, unless they are 1 star. In that case, we'll tell you no, that's naughty. I'm just kidding. B, where can people find you?
Well, if people want to find me personally, they can find me on my Twitter page at twitter.com/bjamine. On my personal writers page on Facebook at facebook.com/terribleaussie. And of course, you can find all my work over at supermarcy.com with all my reviews and columns. I know people probably wondering, Bean, where the hell is Bad Movie Tweet? It's been a while since you've last done one. It's been almost nearly 2 months now. And I promise you, it's coming, the newest version. I've just been caught up with a whole bunch of stuff over the last 2 months, including a top secret project that Marcy and I have been working on, but we can't divulge what that is yet.
Yes, and I will also be bringing back the movies that make Marcy, and we will be doing more YouTube content. Check out in the next few weeks after this podcast release. There'll be lots of stuff happening, and we will be back with podcasters in October for the spooky season. So, how exciting.
Sorry.
Until next time, I've been Super, Bean's been terrible, and we ain't fucking switching bodies, because I ain't being Bead for 1 second.
No. If I switched bodies with you, Marcy, and the cat was inside your body, I'd be like, yeah, I'm totally going to be a serial killer now. But in the meantime, though, we'll see you next month for Podcasts of Horror.
Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Super Network is proudly sponsored by Surfshark VPN. Why would you have a VPN in this day and age? Well, a lot of people are quite concerned about tracking and their online privacy, and using a VPN ensures that you are safe and secure online. Surfshark VPN provides a lot of extra added layers of security, as well as ad blocker and a kill switch if your information is ever compromised. A great bonus feature with having Surfshark is something is not available on your streaming service in your country. You just pop on that Surfshark VPN and you can probably find so much more streaming in different countries. If you want to find something like Masters of Horror, it is available on Tubi, so just select the correct country and you'll be able to watch such a great and fantastic show. Surfshark VPN is one of the most reliable and cheapest of the VPNs out there, with up to 81% off offer when you subscribe for 24 months. Please use the link surfshark.deals/supernetwork to take advantage of this amazing deal. You can also find the link in the show notes. Thank you, Surfshark. Surfy Shark, do 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 do. Surfy Shark, do 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 do. And now back to the show.